on today's Run to the Top podcast.
To say I've enjoyed the training is not quite right, but I enjoy the way I feel, and I certainly feel better. My muscles are better, my knees are better. It doesn't matter what age you are, as long as you're fit and healthy, go out there and get fit, because at 60, there's a lot of life still to live.
Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast from Runners Connect, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. Together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now here's your host, Stephanie K. Atwood.
Welcome everyone. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, Boston Marathon qualifier, coach, and host for the Run to the Top podcast. On today's podcast, we have one of the world's best bakers, Jane Beadle, here to talk about her participation in the Great British Bake Off show and how that fits into running the London Marathon. I know that any of us who have watched this show know how well the participants apply themselves under duress. Let's get more of Jane's story and how this all fits into training and running the London Marathon. It's so exciting. Jane Beadle is a professional garden designer of 15 years, amateur baker, and finalist on the Great British Bake Off of 2016. Hailing from England, Jane swapped her gardening rig for her rolling pin and followed her family's passion for baking into the famous Great British Bake Off tent. Since the show, she has appeared on the ITV Lorraine show and at numerous food festivals, as well as hosting her first supper clubs and cooking classes. In 2018, Jane is running the London Marathon with 12 other Great British Bake Offers, a baker's dozen. As part of her training, she has been exploring sugar-free baking so that she can have her cake and literally eat it too. Thank you for joining me today, Jane, from across the ocean.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure.
I'm so glad to have you here. So we always start off with four basic questions, and you have the option of refusing to answer any of them, but I hope you won't. How old are you now? Where were you born? Where are you living now? And what is your favorite race distance or type of race?
Oh, okay. I'm happy to answer all of them. I am, and it takes me a little while to work out, I'm 63 now. I'm 63 in March. What was the next one? Where was I born?
Where were you born?
I was born in Hastings in England, so right by the seaside. I'm currently living in South London, although next month I hope to be moving down to a little village just outside of Canterbury, so nice. Not far from the glorious cathedral and actually where I was at university in the 70s.
Wow.
And my favourite race distance? I've never done a race before. That's not technically true. I did do a half marathon organised by the London Marathon people in March and hated every single minute of it. So I would have to say my favourite distance would probably be 5K. I'm now very comfortable with 5K, but getting much better at the 10K end. So, yeah, improving every day, I think.
All right. Well, I was wondering when I came around to this Great British Bake Off group of people running the London Marathon, I was really fascinated by that because I thought, what is their connection to running? And, you know, how did this come about? So let's start with that. Is running almost totally new, or have you been running for years? It sounds like you've got some running in there, but tell me about your running history, your running experience.
Okay, that won't take very long at all. I started running two days after Christmas this year.
Wow.
It's one of those things that I suppose through the years I've always thought, wouldn't it be great if I was a runner? Everybody talks about how good you feel and all this wonderful release of endorphins. And I had, in moments of madness, sort of don my trainers and go for a quick jog around the block. You know, as most people, I think you either have a cold or a busy day, and then you don't go out one day, and then you don't go out the next day, and then you never go out again. And that was my running experience. I have probably in my life, before I started training for the marathon, I had probably run more a dozen times.
Wow.
No more than that. I'm really not a runner at all.
Wow. So running this marathon, something else got that started. Some other kind of motivator actually got you started thinking marathon, 26.2 miles. How many kilometers is it? Because you're a kilometer lady, I'm guessing.
No, I'm really miles, but I think it's about 41 kilometers, something like that.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. England is miles as well. We hold on to our traditions pretty dearly, don't we?
We do indeed, yeah.
So we are going to go back to talking more about this marathon training, because I'm really, it just is so exciting to me, and also your participation in the Great British Bake Off. But tell us a bit about yourself in general, growing up, your family, your education, how you got involved in baking, and since you're a gardener as well, how that all came about. How is all of that part of your life?
Oh, it's all a very long story. Well, my grandfather used to own a bakery in Hastings, where I was born, and my dad was being trained really to take over the business. So he would work in the bread making department or the cake decorating department, and bring lots of wonderful things home. And because of that, he would very much enjoy decorating all the cakes. My mother was a cook, but my dad was definitely a decorator. He Wow. thought presentation was the most important thing. And he would say, you first eat with your eyes, so let's make it look beautiful. And then, you know what you're going to eat, and you reach it with such anticipation because it looks gorgeous. Yeah, it's fantastic. So he was always the cake decorator. He never did take over the business. They sold it, and Dad moved on to do other things. But he still always did the Christmas cakes and the birthday cakes. And he and I, we used to cook the dinners together during the week, because Mum was used to work late. So it was always first home, cook the dinner when I was still living at home. So I think my love of baking and decorating came from my dad. And up until the time I finished university, whenever I was at home, I would bake. Once I left home, life was too exciting and baking didn't really happen very much at all until I had my children. And then, of course, I think it's competitive baking kicks in, doesn't it? you have all their little friends around for tea and you want to have the best cakes or the best biscuits. And if your children decorate their biscuits, you then tidy them up before anybody sees them, because of course you want them to be the best. I learned very quickly that way madness lies. And you should just let the kids slap their icing wherever they want to.
Indeed.
So that's when I started baking again. And I did try and work from home, which is what led on to the gardening, really. Once the children were old enough to go to kindergarten, I wanted to make sure I was around for them during the day, pick them up from school and take them to school and be there for homework and things.
Right.
So gave up my work in London. I used to work sort of in advertising related businesses. And a friend and I were sitting there one afternoon, her youngest was about to start school as well. And we were trying to think of what we could do to stay at home and still manage to earn a living. And we came up with the idea that the thing we were both good at and enjoyed doing was gardening. So over a cup of tea, which then progressed to a glass of wine, I think.
Only one.
only one. We were, of course. We hatched this plot that as soon as the kids were at school, we would put these leaflets through doors offering autumn tidy-ups, clearing up leaves, raking lawns, trimming hedges. And I don't know whether it was because we were two women and an awful lot of the elderly feel safer with two women, or whether we were just particularly lovable. But within a week, we had a business.
We were
hopeless at it. We weren't hopeless at it as far as the work we did, because we were very conscientious, but we were completely green as far as, which is probably quite a good adjective, as far as running a business. And
oh
we
my
would
gosh.
Pull a number out of the air and say, yes, that'll be £10 and 2 days later we've earned nothing.
a big learning curve.
Very steep learning curve. But we soon got it together, and from that, as people trusted us more and asked us to redevelop some of their borders and do some extra planting or perhaps suggest a new design for their patio, I thought, well, actually, it's all very well sort of going on gut instinct, but perhaps I ought to learn how to do it properly. And I went and did we have a qualification called City and Guilds, and I did an evening class, which I soon realised was just really if you wanted to develop your own garden. And actually what it did was highlight how much more there was to know. So I then went off and did a garden design degree over a four-year period. It was a part-time degree because that fitted in really well with the kids and continuing to work. And I suppose, I can't remember how old I was now. I think I finished that when I was about 52, 53.
Wow.
It's a very popular second career choice over here. You won't find many 21-year-old garden designers, but you'll find lots of 50-year-old garden designers.
Fascinating.
Well, it's a brilliant thing to go into, I think, because you can, you're self-employed, or most of us are self-employed, and you can dovetail it with lots of other things. So if you want to bake, you can be a garden designer. If you want to pick your kids up from school, you can be a garden designer. And it's glorious. You're out of doors half the time. You're stuck at your desk with paperwork the other half of the time, but then you can't have everything.
That's the nature of running a business, isn't it? Just having that paperwork part of it, unfortunately. I do want to ask you a little more about the Great British Bake Off, because I was introduced to that show by my daughter, and I was hooked. I mean, my gosh, you start watching one and then you go through bunches of them. But how do contestants actually get to participate in that? And then talk about your specific experience. How far did you get in the, you know, in the cutoffs?
Right. You apply is how you get onto it. There is an application form that's about 1 million miles long, asking you about your baking experience, how you got into it, what you feel when you're baking. There's a touchy-feely side to the questions as well. And then you send lots and lots of photos of things that you baked. And then you will get a telephone interview, which goes on for about 45 minutes, with some technical questions, and then again how you feel when you're baking, what your family connections are and all that. If you get chosen after that, you are asked to bake some items and take them along to an audition, and you are grilled, and I can only use that word, grilled by the Home Economist on your baking. Yeah. And how you made it, because I guess at that stage, you know, you could have got your mum to make it and take it up with you. If you get through that, you have a screen test. The next stage is another big audition where you are told to take some very specific bakes up with you. And then if you are a watcher of the Bake Off, you do a technical challenge. You are filmed. It's a case of ready, steady, bake. Take the gingham tablecloth off your ingredients and bake whatever you're told to bake.
Wow.
And if you get through that, providing you pass the, you do a psych test, you go and have a meeting with a psychologist to make sure that you're going to be able to cope under the pressure, and then you're in.
Wow. Oh, such a simple process.
It goes on for ages and ages.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm so impressed that you did that. And I also, you know, it's just so fascinating the challenges that you have to deal with when you're on that show. The pressure must be phenomenal.
Interestingly, I don't think it feels quite as pressurized in the tent as perhaps the viewers might think. Yes. You are very much on the clock, and it's exactly as you see it. You know, people very often ask me when they say it's an hour, is it really an hour?
Yeah.
Oh, exactly. It is exactly an hour, and not a second more. But I think They must do very well in the casting because we all just get our head down and get on with it. I haven't seen anybody freak out and fail. So I think most of us, all of us, would just go, right, fine, well, that's it, we're on the clock, how are we going to do this? And if it all goes wrong, how are we going to then sort it out? People are very resilient. And I think the pressure is beforehand.
Getting to the point where you can actually be a contestant? Is that what you're saying?
No, from the point that you know when you're on the show, mm-hmm. you have 5 weeks before filming. Mm-hmm. Well, we have 5 weeks before filming. Mm-hmm. And all your recipes have to be prepared and submitted then. And you're very much on your own. You have no idea who anybody else is and what anybody else is going to be doing. And, of course, you know everybody's a better baker than you. So you have to throw the kitchen sink at it.
Right.
And 1 week you'll get recipe requests for 2 episodes, submit those recipe requests for the next 2, and so on and so on. There is no break from it. In fact, the day before we started filming, most of us hadn't looked at the recipes that we were doing the next day.
Wow.
Because we'd only just submitted the recipes for episode 9 and 10. Well, not 10 because that's the final, but episode 9. And you know, I don't know about you, when you watch the show, they'll be asked, how many times have you practiced this at home? Or have you ever done this completely at home? And so often the contestants will say, well, no, I've practiced it in parts. And you sit on the sofa judging and saying, but surely you would have practiced it. You know you're going to be on television, but actually there's just no time to practice it because of the pressure of submitting all the recipes.
Gotcha.
And I think that's half the fun of it, actually, to see how we all cope on the day.
Well, it's so entertaining. It's just really fun to watch. It sounds like you made friends from being a participant and being involved in the Great British Bake Off. And how did all of this lead to your training and actually 12 of you training to run the London Marathon?
Yes, it's one of those stories. And my husband says you should be careful what you wish for. I wanted to run the marathon on and off. With no training, since it was first run in 1981, I think it was.
Wow.
I think they only had about 7,500 participants mm-hmm. then. Mm. And I then was about 2 years out of university and lived in my first sort of out of university group house, which was just up the road from the start of the marathon. And of course, you know, what do you do on a Sunday morning when you're 24 and slightly hungover from the night before, you go out for a stroll and watch people running around in shorts. And it's very inspiring watching a group of people go off and do anything. And I think I'd always thought one day I'll do that. And as the marathon has grown, and I don't know how many participants there are now, over 50,000, I think. I mean, it's massive now. And I always try and watch it. I always try and watch sort of big bits of it because to see groups of ordinary people, not the elite athletes who are always entertaining to watch, but the group of ordinary people en masse going out and doing this huge participation sport, helping each other. There's a lot of helping each other. This year's one, the theme is Spirit of London. I don't know if anybody saw it last year, but an athlete stopped and helped another one get to the finish line. And that sort of thing is so inspiring and heartwarming.
Indeed.
So I was sitting on the sofa watching a bit of the marathon, probably having a cup of tea and a piece of cake, and tweeted, oh, my goodness, or something along these lines, I really must do this sometime. And Candice, who won my year of Bake Off, tweeted back, yes, let's do this. So we were just talking. I really didn't intend to do this at all.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether you guys have seen Richard Burr, who is a finalist, and don't ask me which series, probably your series one, our series 4.
Oh, okay.
Marv, wonderful chap. If anybody can't remember his name, he always had a pencil behind his ear. Fantastic baker and absolutely delightful. His wife Sarah worked for Transport for London at the time, and she's a real tour de force. And she said, okay, you guys, well, let's put your money where your mouths are. I'm going to get a team together to run the marathon. I'm going to speak to the marathon and see if we can get you in as a team, which is exactly what she did. And at one point, I double booked myself for this weekend, and I still have, actually. I'm doing a food festival way up in the north of England. And I said, oh, Sarah, I don't think I can do it. I'm sorry, I'm double booked. I've got to work. And she said, no, you haven't. Just tell them you can't do the Sunday and you come back Saturday night after working up north, and you will run the marathon on Sunday. Oh, and that's how I got where I am today.
Wow.
ready to catch a train up north and run the marathon in London on Sunday.
Oh, my
gosh. I'm very glad she did, actually. It's been the most fantastic experience.
Now, talk to me about training, because are the 12 of you training together as a team, or are you only seeing each other periodically or tweeting or however you communicate that way? How is the training actually happening?
We're all training individually. None of us run together. In fact, several of us were up for registration yesterday, and one of them said, you know, we've never run together, have we? And we feel as though we really know each other and how everybody's training's going so well, because we're all on a WhatsApp group. So when anybody's having a bad day, the group really support. We also, a lot of us are running on a group. I don't know whether you have this app over there called Strava. I'm sure you.
Oh, yes, of course we have Strava.
You see, I'm a complete novice to all this, so I was introduced to Strava by some of the other runners, so we can see how everybody's doing and then encourage everybody, and they can see our moans and our groans and our good days and our bad days.
Absolutely.
And actually, everybody's helped each other through, because I think it's very isolating, isn't it? It's one of those sports you have to go out and do it at whatever time suits your timetable, work or family or whatever it is.
Now, are you training, are you running by yourself for these long distances, or do you have people locally who you're running with?
No, I'm running on my own.
Oh, okay.
I haven't come across anybody locally, and occasionally, and I'm really occasionally, I run, in the early stages, I ran with my daughter, but she lives a couple of hours away from me, so we don't do that. No, it's quite lonely going out and doing the long stuff.
So talk to me about your training a bit more. Now, your marathon is, what, about a month away? Is that right?
No. What are we today? Thursday? It's on Sunday.
So it's this Sunday. Oh, my gosh.
2.5 days away.
Oh, my gosh. Where am I with dates and things? Okay, so you're in taper mode. But talk to me about how far you have run in any single run, and also how many weeks you were training before before you arrived at this point. When did you start your training, and what is the farthest distance that you've run?
Right. Now, I started training much too late. There'd been some horrible viruses knocking about. So sort of from October to Christmas, I was quite poorly on and off. So I didn't start my training until 27th of December. I can be very specific about that. 27th of December, I went out for a short jog, really, with my daughter.
Yeah.
And it was 6K, but most of that was walking. I really struggle with my breathing.
Uh-huh.
So I think Amy thought that perhaps, you know, she would have to administer CPR or something halfway around. But so then I started 27th, and I haven't followed a plan, which is possibly not a good idea. But I know that my abilities, my running ability is so poor and my breathing is so poor that I used to think, well, OK, I'm just going to go out every day, or not every day. So three times a week, and walk between two lampposts and jog between the next two and gradually build it up. And that's what I've done. I've listened a bit to some of the others. So they say do a long run at the weekend and a couple of short ones. I've been to the gym a couple of times a week because my knees are very cranky, and doing a little bit of cross training and bike and weights has really helped that.
Good.
I think the thing is, you get to, if you start running at my age, I was 62 then, I was a youngster. if you start running at my age, you have to be sensible, you have to be careful. It's so easy to do yourself a mischief. And touching wood, I've come through with the least amount of injuries out of all of them, I think. So I'm they're out there for a time. They're out there to really beat the clock. And I have no strategy. No, I have very realistic expectations. I want to get around.
Yeah.
So, I want to get around before they take the finishing post down.
So that you're crossing that finish line is going to be the success. It doesn't matter what the time is. It doesn't matter what any other aspect of it is except crossing that finish line, right?
Absolutely. Actually, I think, I mean, I do want to do it, and I will do it, and I will finish, God willing. But I'm a winner already because I'm fitter now. I can run 10K, and I couldn't do that at Christmas.
That is so cool. Now, what is the longest distance that you've covered?
The longest distance I've done is 15 miles.
Okay. So what is your tentative strategy for finishing this 26.2 miles?
Well, it's really gone out of the window with the heat because we have had the most miserable cold spring, and it's gone from 8 degrees to 27 degrees today in the space of 4 days. So, wow. Or 5 days. So, you know, no time to get used to running in shorts where we've been running in, you know, lots of long trousers. So I'm going to take it very slowly. I'm going to be quite happy to walk if it really gets to me. I'm going to make sure I'm in the shade as much as I can be. I would say that I find jogging less painful than walking after about 12, 13 miles. So
interesting.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I think we'll just take it easy and not push myself and not be tempted to race off too fast at the start.
Now, are you running with any of the other 12 Baker's Dozen, or are you each just doing your own thing on race day?
We're all starting together.
Uh-huh.
But there are some very fit people there, you know, who are, a couple of them are aiming for under 3 hours.
Right.
Sort of the four and a half hours. But there are a couple of us who are running at a similar pace. So I'm hoping we will stay together for as long as we want to and have to sort of play it by ear and see how we go, really.
Now, you do have quite – I saw a picture of the group, and there's a huge variety of ages. There are, of course, a couple different genders there and also different body types. So it doesn't surprise me that you have a lot of different goals within that group. But time-wise, then, do you have a pace that you're planning on keeping up, or is it really just sort of how the day comes together?
It really is how the day comes together. I have no idea how I'm going to cope with the heat. The heat is really significant, but I would love to get in under 6 hours. That's my goal, is 5.5 to 6 hours. I don't know what that pace is. It'll be about 7, but how you work a pace out, I'm really not sure. But
are you using some kind of GPS device, or are you just going out there and making it happen?
Well, I'd say Strava on my phone.
On your phone. Yeah.
Theory is GPS, isn't it? But sometimes Strava is a little inaccurate. I've had it tell me I'm running really, really fast when I know I haven't been. And then I know I do a certain distance and it tells me I've done less or more. So I think you can only use it as a guide, really, can't you? Something to make you go out and make you still record it.
Right. You might want to check on the kilometer versus mile thing and see if you can change that setting. I'm pretty sure that you've got it set on kilometers, because I don't know what those numbers would be otherwise. And probably the London Marathon has both miles and kilometers, because I'm sure you attract quite a group of people from all over Europe as well as other parts of the world.
Oh, absolutely. It does do it in miles and kilometers. And actually, we get a lot of people coming over from the States for it.
Yeah.
And I understand, because you've just had the Boston Marathon on Monday.
Correct.
And I think your weather was horrific
for
that.
Oh, my gosh.
And I understand people run the Boston Marathon, then come over and run the London Marathon. That's madness, isn't it? I think. Exhaustion and jet lag.
Yeah, well, I'm really excited for you. I think it's going to be quite the experience for you running a marathon as your really your first official competitive race.
That is not quite true, because I did do the half marathon that the London Marathon organized at the beginning of March.
Oh, okay.
And it was just a good opportunity to gauge where you were in your training, which was actually quite depressing because I wasn't as far forward as I hoped. But I did overtake a chap dressed as a tractor, uh-huh. which I was really pleased about.
Congratulations.
Yep, and a rhinoceros. I overtook a rhinoceros as well.
Wow.
That would have been shaming had I been beaten by a tractor and a rhinoceros.
Well, and you lived to tell about it too, because they could have just smashed you, you know? Good for you. Now, okay, how about eating during your training as well as because you're a baker, has there been any way of nutrition that you've used because, you know, specifically because of the baking that you do? I know you've also talked about sugar-free baking. So is that in there? Is that in part of your nutrition plan, or how does that all fit together?
The sugar-free was a January thing. Quite honestly, sugar-free baking is fairly ghastly. There are some reasonably good alternatives, but if you're going to have a piece of cake, but just don't have four pieces of cake. So I've come to the conclusion that unless you absolutely have to go sugar-free for, you know, diabetes reasons or whatever, use sugar, but just eat less.
I'm with you there. In fact, my husband, many, many years ago, we were experimenting with different kinds of flour and alternative fats and things. And he, you know, early on said, if you're going to bake something, then bake it with the best ingredients to make it taste the best. And that's butter, and that's refined flour, and it's sugar, it's white sugar. And as you said, just in moderation in terms of eating it. But, you know, if you want it to taste good, those ingredients really make it great.
Oh, absolutely. You know, a lettuce leaf is fine, but if you want a treat, have a really nice cake.
Now, has your weight changed during this training program? You know, do you feel like you've added more muscle? It sounds like you are seeing a difference in your body.
Well, I haven't noticed particularly a difference, but my husband and my daughter say that my shape has changed, which is good. I lost about, do you have stones over there? I lost about 14 pounds in January started training.
We have pounds, and stones for most of us doesn't mean much of anything. So thank you for clarifying that.
So yeah, the kilos, I haven't got a clue what that was, but I lost 14 pounds in January, and I think I haven't lost any more, but I'm pretty sure I put on muscle, and I believe muscle's heavier than fat. So
indeed, yeah. Well, what a learning experience for you, because, you know, with your being new to this running stuff, I'm sure that a lot of it has been kind of a surprise. Have you been more hungry, or are you keeping your appetite about the same?
I would say I'm keeping my appetite about the same. I do most of my running in the morning. Mm-hmm. So I try and have something very, very light when I get up, and then go for a run, and then have a good breakfast when I come back. Mm-hmm. I haven't really changed my eating otherwise. Somebody told me that the cyclists in France swear by beetroot juice. Now, beetroot is one of those things I absolutely detest, but I have been buying beetroot juice and gulping down glasses of it as mm-hmm. though I'm taking medicine. Mm-hmm. I didn't notice any difference, to be honest, so I've stopped doing that. I just eat sensibly. I eat a well-balanced diet. We don't eat takeaways. We have home-cooked meals all the time. And I'm not particularly good. If I fancy a packet of crisps, I'll have a packet of crisps. Perhaps people will say I haven't really taken this seriously enough, but, you know, it's had to fit in with my life. And to say I've enjoyed the training is not quite right, but I enjoy the way I feel, and I certainly feel better. I was beginning to feel as though I had to think about how I was going to get in and out of a car because the hips ached a bit and the knees ached a bit. And you kind of say, well, you know, I'm in my 60s now. What do you expect? Actually, I don't have to think about that anymore. My muscles are better. My knees are better. And I think if I want anybody to take anything away from me doing it, it doesn't matter what age you are. As long as you're fit and healthy, go out there and get fit, because at 60, there's a lot of life still to live.
Oh, my gosh.
And you owe it to yourself to live it as best as you can. And if I can get fit, anybody can. Well, it's not with your health.
I think the notion on this show and for the runners who listen to it, from a person who I interviewed earlier, Amby Burfoot, who has written a book about running forever, is that most of us really want to be fit forever. And as you just said, starting running at 60 is not... it's not something that you should feel, that any of us should feel we can't do. It's really more in our heads, and you are definitely an optimist. I hear that in everything you say, with some humor there as well. But, you know, this whole notion of it's never too late to start, really. And running is one of those sports that is so possible wherever you are, that I really appreciate your attitude, and I hope you'll keep it up. Maybe there won't be more marathons per se, but maybe there will be lots of 5Ks. Who knows?
I hope so. You know, we're moving house this next month, with luck, and I'm going to join the local running club because it's a really good way of making new friends in a different area. So that's one positive. And two, they say... Well, sadly, my mother had vascular dementia. She didn't have Alzheimer's, she had vascular dementia. And they say that you can do something to stop that by keeping yourself fit and healthy and the blood pumping round. So whether it's the gym, whether it's the cycling, whether it's swimming or whether it's running, but, you know, I'm out to try and stop my brain seizing up. I've seen it firsthand, and as many people have. And as we get older and the population ages, there's more of it around. And I think we owe it to ourselves and to people who are looking after us and who love us to do everything we can to ward off some of those awful, awful things that we
hear. Hear, hear. Yes, I totally agree with you. I think that's a really good place for us to pause for a word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
If you're struggling with injuries and have tried everything to stay healthy, we've put together a course that is exactly what you need. How is this course different? Unlike most injury prevention advice, we get specific to your issues and skip the generic exercises. We start by giving you a mobility and strength assessment to identify where you are susceptible to injuries. Then, based on the results of the test, we give you a specific day-by-day plan to attack these issues. Each day's prescription takes less than 15 minutes to implement and includes videos, PDFs, and written descriptions of the exact stretching, strength, foam rolling, and treatment routines you need to do each day. On top of this, we help you identify when you are safe to return to running, how to modify your training, how to find the right shoe, and how to fit everything in with your tight schedule. To check out the course, head to runnersconnect.net/injury. Last year, when we put this course together, we asked our email list to try it out. 262 runners took us up on the offer. Of those 262 runners, 82%, yes, 214 total, were able to get completely healthy within 3 weeks. Now's your chance. Visit runnersconnect.net/injury and see how.
Okay, we are right back. And we are moving into the final kick. This is Stephanie Atwood with Jane Beadle, who is about to run her first marathon in the London Marathon. So exciting. I'm really excited for you, Jane.
Oh, thank you.
Now, on these final kick questions, would you like me to go over the details with you?
Yes, please.
Okay. The first one is, what is your favorite local training run? And tell us enough that our runners could find it if they come to your city. This really is an opportunity in my mind for our listeners who are from all over the world to be able to come to your town. So remind us of what that is again. And then tell us where you do your run so that they could try it out if they end up in your neck of the woods sometime.
Well, I live in Beckenham, South London, and it is quite built up. So we have, it's a lot of road running around here, and I'm in a dip. So whichever way you run, you have to run up a hill in one direction or another.
It's good for you.
It's supposed to be good for you, and it's great on the way home because it's always downhill, which I think is the right way. You don't want to end up on the hill. And probably my favourite run is around about 10K, and I start from home and run through. I don't know if you know what allotments are, but they're little areas that people who don't have gardens or space to grow things can grow their vegetables. So
oh,
we have
a
path through some allotments, and then through a very small park called Cater Park, up a hill and into Crystal Palace Park. And Crystal Palace Park, for those of you who don't know, was a park that housed the Crystal Palace. It had been up in London in, the time of the Great Exhibition, so the beginning of the 1900s, and was then moved down permanently to a site in South London. Sadly, it then burnt down, but it had a park built around it. It has got dinosaurs in it. Now, not dinosaurs that anybody would recognize. They were built and made at a time when people weren't awfully aware of what dinosaurs really did look like, but they have been maintained and they're in this park. It's a very steep park, but it's a lovely run. It's got lakes, it's got paths, it's got the ruins of the old Crystal Palace, and it's for me a run all the way home. So for any visitors, come and park down the bottom of the hill at Beckenham and find your route through Cater Park up to Crystal Palace Park, round the park. You can stop off for a coffee on the way home and then run back down the hill again.
Oh, my gosh, that sounds terrific. What fun.
Thanks.
Now, how about running books? Have you been boning up on running information since you're becoming a marathoner?
No, I haven't. I'm sorry. I don't do that sort of thing. I really ought to. I do have an email that comes through every morning called Real Buzz. I don't know, something like that. And occasionally it'll come through and it'll say 10 things you shouldn't do. And I might just read that. But I mean, once in a blue moon, I'm sorry. I just get on with it myself. And it's not the way I should do it. And I don't advise anybody else to do that. But yes, yeah, sorry, I don't read any books.
You are going to have quite the adventure on this marathon, Jane.
They say ignorance is bliss.
They do say that, yeah. And a tidbit of wisdom or humor for our listeners.
Okay, this is for all you older people out there. And it's a practical one. I plan my route around rest stops. Because there is nothing worse than suddenly feeling that you need a restroom 10 minutes into your run. And so I plan my route. And if I'm out early and the local parks haven't opened, mm-hmm. the ones there, mm-hmm. then it's a real disappointment to me. So practically speaking, Plan your routes carefully.
I love the long ones. I love that. That is, it's such an important issue for a lot of women, especially. So yes, thank you for bringing that up and making that making us all aware of that issue for many, many women. I'm definitely aware of that. Jane, please give us contact information, how our listeners might be able to learn more about your progress on this marathon, as well as you have a beautiful website, or maybe it's Twitter, but it's beautiful pictures of all of the things you've baked.
Oh, thank you. That's probably Instagram. So you can find me on Instagram, and that's at Jane B. Bakes. That's J-A-N-E B Bakes, B-A-K-E-S. And similarly on Twitter, at Jane B. Bakes on Twitter. And I don't really do Facebook. It's just because I have never really got into it. Mm-hmm. And I do have a website that I don't keep as up to date as I should, because I'm very busy at the moment. But that is janebbakes.com. So you can find me anywhere on there and email me. There are email instructions on any of them as well. So super. If you'd like to get in touch. And people do. People do get in touch from the States, and it's so lovely.
Oh, nice. Now, are you going to be posting on any of these about your marathon day? And afterward, are you going to be letting us know how that goes?
Oh, absolutely. I'll be on Twitter and on Instagram, especially if I finish. If you don't hear anything, it's probably because I'm shamefully sort of sitting in a pub halfway around.
You are going to finish.
I'm going to finish.
You might be checking out the restrooms on the way, the porta potties and all of that kind of thing. But that's a nice thing about races. They always have lots of them along the side of the route.
Yes, I'm very grateful for that.
Jane, thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, Stephanie. Thank you. Where's the time gone? It's flown by.
I know. It's amazing. Just talking about these things is so much fun for me. I love being the host of these programs. Thank you, audience, for joining us for today's podcast at Run to the Top. You can follow us at the Runners Connect Winner Circle on Facebook at runnersconnect.net/FB. You can also subscribe to Run to the Top podcast at runnersconnect.net or on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, etc. Jane, thank you again so much for taking time to do this today, and great, great luck for you on Sunday.
Oh, thank you so much. I really enjoyed it, Stephanie. Thank you.
Thank you, listeners. We'll be back next week with another great talk to entertain you as you head on out to your favorite running spot. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, your host with Run to the Top. See you soon. Hello, everyone. This is Stephanie, and I am returning to speak with Jane Beadle, who has now actually completed the London Marathon, and I'm hoping that she'll have all of the juicy tidbits of doing that marathon, which this year, as most of you know, was incredibly hot, a record hot for the London Marathon. But we're going to let Jane tell us the rest of the story. And Jane, welcome.
Thank you. Welcome. Nice talking to you again.
Yeah. So just give us the rest of the story. When we talked before, you had not done your marathon. Now you've finished it, and this was your first. Congratulations. Wow.
Oh, thank you very much.
And so give us the inside story here. How'd it go?
Well, I'm still here to tell the tale, which was always a worry.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I found it really difficult, to be honest. It was an incredibly warm day for us, perhaps not for many of your listeners over there, but for us, just literally just coming out of winter. So we'd been about 10 degrees the week before, suddenly up to nearly 24 degrees.
And what is that? That's about like 80 degrees or something, I think, for us who use the Fahrenheit.
I think it is. You know, I've got out of the swing of Fahrenheit, but I think it's the late 70s, 80 Fahrenheit.
Right, right. And you were out there for several hours too. How many hours did it take you to complete this thing?
I'm ashamed to say, that's really cruel of you to ask, actually. I was there for about 6.5 hours.
Yeah, no, congratulations. You know, a first marathon, crossing that finish line, is such a big accomplishment. So give yourself credit for that. You did really well. And in that heat as well. I mean, that's just a very difficult thing. So I think there must have been some mind over matter at some points.
There was a lot of mind over matter, certainly for the last 6 miles. It was just grinning and bearing it and getting on with it. And we finished just in front of Buckingham Palace. So we turn the corner past Buckingham Palace, and then we do about 200 yards, 250 yards. And I am a bit of a golfer, and I thought that's about the length of a long par three, and I can run that. So I had been walking quite a bit, but I managed to run over the finishing line, which I was very pleased about.
Yay. I was definitely rooting for you, but I was concerned about your training level and finishing that marathon, and then hearing about the heat, which can be so difficult for people.
Well, I don't think I trained enough. I knew beforehand that just under 4 months was not enough to do a marathon from complete zero. So I was lucky and grateful that I got round, and I am pretty determined. All the 13 bakers lined up at the start and all finished. So I think that goes to show that we're a pretty determined bunch.
Wow, that's so cool. I did want to bring that up, because I didn't bring it up in our original interview, that you were actually doing this as some kind of a fundraising project. And I'd like to know both what the fundraising was about, and then also how much money the team raised.
Well, I don't know what the total is for the team, to be honest. Yes, so from the Great British Bake Off, over several series, there was a baker's dozen. Do you have that term?
Yes.
Over there?
Yes.
So there were 13 of us, and we'd been told by the marathon it was very unlikely to get all 13 to the start line because of injuries and what have you.
Right.
But all 13 got to the start line in spite of many injuries amongst all the younger, fitter members of the cast or
right.
the crew.
Right.
And all 13 of us got over the finish line, which was no small feat in itself. But I was definitely bringing up the rear. I was the slowest by far. But yes, we all got round. And the majority of us were raising money for an organisation called Great Ormond Street Children's Hospital. So it's our premier children's hospital in London that treats kids from all around the country, really, and does some fantastic work. We were all very privileged to visit some of the children there and see what great work they do and what great kids. You know, they're
oh my gosh.
All of us, they're so positive in some fairly awful circumstances. So we were pretty much inspired by that.
Yeah, that's terrific. Well, congratulations on that part of it too, because it's great to be doing more than just moving your body to finish the marathon, to also run that or run and walk it as you did for another cause is really commendable.
Oh, well, I don't know. It does on days where you really don't feel like getting out of bed and pounding the streets, it makes you realize how fortunate you are, and you've just got to get up there and do it, really.
So, Jane, is there another marathon in the future?
Well, had you asked me on the 22nd when I finished, the answer was absolutely, categorically no. However, a couple of days later, when I could actually get down the stairs at home and my feet stopped hurting, I did go out for another run, and I've been out for a couple of runs since, and I have applied in the ballot for the marathon next year. So, yes, I think the answer is yes, there's another marathon in me. I think I did it so slowly this year. There's the competitive bit of me that wants to beat that awful time I did this year. So I think the London Marathon may have made a runner of me.
Oh, well, that's excellent. And congratulations again. And I would recommend, as well as you already said, give yourself a little more time to prepare for this thing. But you're quite amazing. And thanks so much for taking the time to review the London Marathon and the Great British Bake Off woman contender. It's terrific to know that people can do both, be excellent bakers and also be participants in a marathon.
Well, I'm not sure I was excellent in either of them, but thank you, Stephanie.
You take care.
Thank you, and you. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from runnersconnect.net.